It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. Mike Ward on assignment. Isn't that what they say? He's on assignment this week. Actually, not, and you would think, it's going to have something to do with maybe being across the state line, going turkey hunting Mississippi or something. No, it's not turkey hunting. Although I will say probably in the next month and a little more than that, the whole way through May, you might hear Mike's on assignment or I'm on assignment and it'll have to do with turkeys. But I'll get started coming up next week and a lot of excitement around that and a great time to get my friend on the show. And we'll probably figure out how long we've been knowing each other. We're both a lot older than we were back then to talk about turkey hunting. He's a hell of a turkey hunter, hell of a turkey caller. He applies his trade more in the Black Belt of Alabama these days than down here in the Southwest where he started up. But we're going to talk about turkey hunting at home. And then he's the first person I knew, and really the only person I know personally as a friend, that went out and went after a slam and then a world slam. And we're going to talk about that. He is calling us from Lowndes County, but he's one of us from down here in Mobile County originally. Adrian Johnson, thanks for being on the show.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you, too. How long have you and I been doing this? We first started turkey hunting. There was no gray in anybody's hair.
Probably 25 years,
yeah.
If I had to guess.
Yeah, that's a long time chasing birds out there. And I don't think it's worn off on you, and it's not worn off on me.
I'm still chasing them just as hard now as I did then.
Can you say that for, that's an interesting thing, too, because, like all of us, you deer hunt and you duck hunt. But it seems like turkeys just, you never get jaded to it. Sometimes deer hunting, we get jaded as we get older. I don't feel any of that for turkey hunting.
I don't know what it is about turkey hunting, but it just instills a level of passion that I don't know that I have for any other type of hunting. I love to deer hunt, but if I miss a day deer hunting, I don't get upset about it.
Mm-hmm.
If I miss a morning the turkeys are gobbling, I get upset about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. Yeah, you don't. It's rare that I would lay in bed and worry about what that buck's doing. I mean, I want to see, I got a good buck in the area or whatever, but I don't fret about it and run through 20 different scenarios.
Exactly. If you're a passionate turkey hunter, you love it and you want to go every single day.
Yep. And you were one of the people that, I'll talk about this. I think I was talking about this a couple of weeks ago on the show. And even turkey hunting's politics. I think y'all heard me refer to my friend who was most upset when they changed the start from going to daylight standard time to daylight savings time. Well, it's this man I'm talking to right now, Adrian. You threw a fit.
Yeah, I was one of the few Americans that liked my hour in the morning as opposed to in the afternoon. But all it did, it was just made us change our schedules to 10 o'clock for the start of court in Lowndes County.
Yeah, because you got a court, and so the court is timing is based on, what time we get to go out turkey hunting. But Adrian and I used to talk about this, that, for decades working for these different radio companies, I could pull it off. I could, when we didn't change it, we had probably 2 or 3 weeks before the time changed. Wasn't it that way? Something like that. And we could, at 5:30 in the morning, you were turkey hunting, and I'd be at work by 8 o'clock and nobody was the wiser that I had been turkey hunting that morning.
Exactly. Used to get daylight about 5:15. You'd have a good hour or two and you'd still be in the office by 8:30 and nobody's really upset. And
yeah.
Now it's daylight at 6:15 and you're trying to at least hunt 2 hours in the morning. It makes it a little more difficult to be in a timely manner.
Well, it makes it harder to hide my behaviors. That's what it is.
Exactly.
I've been friends a long time and turkey hunting a long time together. And obviously, growing up hunting Easterns, hunting the hardest Easterns there are to hunt here in Alabama. And then some branching out happened. And I'm trying to think, and you can correct me when that first trip, but I remember you went to Colorado, and I don't know if that preceded others for Florida, but you went to Colorado, and you sent me some pictures, and I'm like, he's gone to Colorado to hunt another subspecies. Some people go to Texas for a Rio, but you'd gone for Miriam's. That was that your first, or second on your list?
That was my first, and it was just organic in the way that it developed. I've been hunting turkey since I was a kid, you know, in Washington County, Choctaw County, where my family's from. My granddad was a big turkey hunter. You know, Colonel Tom Kelly said before World War II, there probably weren't 1,500 turkey hunters in the world. And my grandfather was one of those people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've been around it my whole life. But when I moved to Montgomery after law school, I was practicing in Montgomery and ended up living in Lowndes County and had access to a lot of good places to hunt. But I had a lot of friends from Montgomery that were interested in traveling to hunt other places. And they were putting a trip together to go to Colorado and hunt with a friend that is actually a guide from Alabama that that does hunting leases out in western Colorado. And they had hunted with him a year prior and invited me to go along. And so that's when we made our trip out there. It was in April of 2011. I'll never forget. It was the day that all the tornadoes hit Alabama.
Oh, wow.
Our flights were canceled out of Montgomery. We had to take a flight out of Atlanta and just had an amazing trip and hunted western Colorado. And so that was my first experience of turkey hunting outside of Alabama. Had a great, great trip, and we were able to kill two Merriams while we were out there apiece. But it was interesting. You know, it was my first experience in seeing other ways that people turkey hunt and coming to understand that everything is not a hard charging eastern gobbler in the swamps. You know, there are turkeys in the mountains. There's turkeys in the bottoms. There are turkeys in all types of geographic locations, and it was kind of an illuminating experience for me.
Yeah, it's they are, you know, they're not whitetails, but compared to like – like, you know, I manage for quail and all that. I will say this, compared to a quail, a turkey's a generalist. They can find mm-hmm. they can find a niche maybe where some other critters couldn't, you know, the either different subspecies. But yeah, you think about it's the same different subspecies, but the same species that's gobbling somewhere along the Tom Bigby River this morning that's going to be gobbling in the prairies of the Dakotas.
They're all Meleagris gallopavo,
mm-hmm.
and it's just the different subspecies. After that, Sylvestris is ours, of course, and then the various other subspecies. There are similarities, but there's distinctions and there's subtle differences, and we can talk a little bit more about mm-hmm. that. You know, I've gotten to see the little subtle distinctions. You know, Merriams have a little slightly different gobble. They may yelp a little differently, a little bit different tone. You know, I know ghouls are similar. They have a little different variation. And so you started to get to experience all those different things, and I loved it. I always enjoyed getting to travel and go hunt different places. I had duck hunted a lot of different places before I ever had an opportunity to travel outside of Alabama to go turkey hunting. And so I'd duck hunted in Arkansas and Mississippi and Louisiana and had gone up to hunt around the Chesapeake before I ever took a trip outside the state to go turkey hunting. But once that bug bit me on traveling to turkey hunt, I thought, well, this is it. This is the best thing because you get to experience. In most instances, at that time, our season still came in March 15th and went to April 30th.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the states out west don't even open, or even states up north, until after our season's over. And so it gives you an opportunity to extend the season and hunt in different areas. So it was exciting the first time I ever had an opportunity to go somewhere else.
Yeah, and it's neat. I do want to hear more about the differences in the subspecies because it's, you know, you and I both traveled when we come to duck hunting, but it's because you're raised here where there are enough ducks to get you into it, but not maybe enough to keep you happy. This is us leaving to go turkey hunt somewhere else is like somebody from Arkansas going to hunt ducks somewhere else. There has to be something other than just a chance at a duck.
Exactly. You're leaving really, really good hunting to go somewhere where the hunting might not be as great, but it's different, and you want to go experience that difference.
Yeah, and let's start. We got a few minutes here before the break. Let's start off there. You started with Merriams, and oddly enough, for a long time, you know, the Merriams I've seen in Colorado when I'm mule deer hunting, and then recently this last year in Utah, was supposed to be going this May. I think we just punted till next year. Merriams are on my list, and it's the one left I have left here in the States. Tell me about hunting a Merriam different than hunting an Eastern. I mean, like you said, they sound different, but hunting them, is there any difference in how you set up and hunt them?
It's a little different. I've hunted Merriams in Colorado, in western Colorado, and I've hunted Merriams in South Dakota. And when I hunted in South Dakota, I hunted on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation, which was an amazing experience. I absolutely love the opportunity to hunt Indian reservations. For one thing, they're just vast amounts of land. The Rosebud Reservation is 1.2 million acres. And as long as you have your tribal guide and you've got your tag issued by the tribe, you can hunt anywhere on that 1.2 million acres. And so one thing you find is that Merriams, when they hit the ground, they're moving, and they're moving throughout the whole day. And so the game with Merriams If you're set up on them on the roost, that's great, but then it's a race, and you're constantly trying to get ahead of them to try to be in front of them, and they're easy to call in. You know, out there you're hunting a lot of big open terrain, and so a lot of people will use fanning and different things like that to try to hunt them on the open terrain if it's legal, you know, where you are. But they're just an amazing bird. You know, they're constantly on the move. They're constantly covering ground. They're not really the homebodies like our Easterns are, and so they may have a huge range, and they may travel a couple of miles in the course of a day, and they may roost in the same drainage where they had roosted the night before. They may roost miles away in a different drainage. You know, the difference there is there's not timber like it is here, so there's typically only limited areas where they're going to roost, you know, usually on cottonwoods, in creek bottoms, things like that is a lot of the typical roost sites you're going to see when you're hunting Merriam's.
I tell you what, got me fired up too, is we were at altitude on the side of a mountain in Utah this last season, you know, glass and mule deer, and I had Merriam's coming through, and I'm like, aren't y'all not supposed to be up here? But there they were, up there in the high country. Nobody told them they couldn't. All right, coming back, we're going to continue our conversation. His name is Adrian Johnson, just homeboy, Mobile County, Washington County homeboy. He lives up in Lowndes County now, and he started off, obviously, with Easterns, then went to Merriam's. Then what comes after that? Y'all get ready, pack up. If you've ever thought about doing a slam or a world slam, got the band to talk about it right now on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Coming right back. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on assignment this week. It's actually not turkey hunting, but he'll be back with us next week, and we'll have a few days of turkey season to already start talking about on that show. Talking turkeys right now, my buddy, we figure it's 25 years plus of hunting turkeys together and being buddies, Adrian Johnson. And we're talking about a slam and a world slam as well. But, you know, Judge, during the break there, you and I were talking about Merriam's, and that's the last one I have here in the States to chase, and trying to work a plan to do that. And I was out in Utah this last year, and like I said, we saw them up at elevation where we're glassing for mule deer, but we went back to the dang neighborhood where my buddies live out there, and there were Merriam's in the like neighborhood Merriam's. There'd be somebody's trash can there, and then there'd be a bird, you know, walking past it. It was something.
Well, you mentioned earlier, you know, the thing I love about turkeys is there's an amazingly adaptive species. There's a reason we have them in 49 states. But the first time we went to Colorado, we went out, and there was an old farmer that lived, you know, all the farms out there are down in the bottoms, and then you'd have all the high country up there where you'd go hunt. And we get out there, and this old farmer looks at us and said, "You mean you came all the way from Alabama to hunt these things that hang around my barn every day?" And they were wild turkeys, and they'd just be out there feeding, you know, in the droppings in the cattle lot. They're amazing birds, man. The birds on the rosebud, you know, trying to get out and chase them. I think I mentioned to you on the break, I mean, it's like an old guy from Alabama's dream that there's no fence you can't cross as long as you're on the reservation. You have your tribal guide. If you see a turkey and you're riding down the road and he's strutting out in the middle of a pasture, you can go hunt him. It is absolutely amazing.
When you're a man of the law, when you're stepping over barbed wire fence, are you looking left and right and going, I can do this?
Exactly. Like you're sure this is fine. They're like, oh yeah, as long as you got your tribal guide and your tag, you're good to go. As long as you remain on the reservation. And like I said, the Rosebud, I think was 1.2 million acres, so it's an expansive place. We didn't scratch the surface on hunting on that place.
After Merriam's, what'd you do? What was your next?
So I think next we took some trips to Texas, but I think second I ended up hunting Osceolas. And Osceolas, you know, obviously in Alabama, we're not that far from Florida, but because they're limited in scope to us, one half of one state, basically south of Gainesville, is where you're going to go to get an Osceola. And, you know, a lot of outfitters are charging exorbitant prices for them. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up being prohibitive for a lot of people. I had the benefit of having a lot of friends in my part of the world up here where I live now in Lowndes County that have a lot of friends down there and do a lot of hunt swapping. And so they allow people from Florida to come up and deer hunt with them. And they would go and turkey hunt down in Florida. And so I have a good friend, Will McCurdy, and his uncle David McCurdy, who actually went with me on the trips to Mexico that we'll talk about. They were friends with some folks down around Okeechobee, and I had an opportunity to go with them several years ago and hunt in Osceola, and literally just had a textbook hunt that we get down the day before season, had an opportunity to scout on a big cattle operation, and it was just us. The guy just gave us the key to the gate and said, y'all have at it. And so, you know, opening morning by 6:30, I've got an Osceola on the ground that just 11 and a half inch beard, inch and a, almost a, just shy of an inch and a half. I mean, better than an inch and a quarter, like an inch and 3/8 type spur. I mean, just a really, really good Osceola. Of course, then I proceeded to watch my buddy miss four turkeys in the span of just over 24 hours. I mean, it was a spectacle unrivaled in my turkey hunting time. And so that's a story for another day. But suffice it to say, he did not use his pistol grip shotgun after we returned back from Alabama on that trip. So
Well,
what was left of it, because I think he wrapped it around a cypress tree while we were down there, and you know, threw it in the mud about three times and things like that. So,
you know, the Osceola thing, and so last year I finally got that one off, and unlike you, I didn't have friends down there, so I had to, you know, get some financing options and remortgage the house. But I had a blast, though. Great folks down there. Had a great hunt. A lot of fun down there. I really did. I mean, think about the number of turkeys I killed, but my gosh, did I have fun hunting the Osceolas down there. But they are, I mean, it's just this little window of space. Out of all the subspecies here in the United States, it's so different. I mean, we can talk, we're talking about other subspecies, but there's huge ranges you can go hunt them, but not Osceolas.
That's it. There's just, you know, just basically one part of one state. And really, we were in what you call the true Osceola area, kind of south of State Road 70, which runs through Okeechobee, which if you're south of that line, it opens up earlier than anywhere else in the rest of the country. And we were south of that area on a really interesting place on a cattle operation and had a great, great trip down there. And just had a lot of fun hunting, and my buddy ended up killing his. After he missed four, literally shot every shell he took to Florida. I had to let him borrow some shells, and he finally connects on the last day. But he had hunted the year before, and he killed some turkeys, so he wasn't in the crunch that I was to make sure I was able to scratch my Osceola off my list. But so I did the Osceola, and then we've done a couple of trips to Texas, and then I've hunted Oklahoma and Kansas for Rios.
Let's talk about that. So, let's talk about, and by the way, you and I could have some Osceola discussions about that line and the differences. Three of us went down to Florida, and I'll probably send you the pictures before you can see, and I'm not just strutting around. It's just luck of the draw. Mine's like as Osceola as it gets, and then the other two, one's kind of really 80% Osceola, and then one that was probably 4 pounds bigger. Looks like he'd been flirting with some Easterns. I'll just say that.
The further north you get, that line gets real blurry. You know, I was down in the part of the world where they've got really black wings. The primaries on their wings are really dark. There's not as much barring as there is on an Eastern. And so you can really tell that distinction where they get really, really good spurs. You know, it's not uncommon to kill an Osceola with an inch and a half spur. And so, you know, you start getting that distinction. The further you come back up, you know, up the Florida Peninsula, the more Eastern-like they get, and you start to get to certain areas, and it's just an artificial distinction about, you know, which county you're in or things of that nature.
Now, let's talk about Rios. My experience is 30 years ago, I killed my Rios. I just got an invite out of nowhere, had never killed anything but an Eastern, went out there. I don't know if it was just a good year or whatever. It was the dangest thing I'd ever seen. You and I have talked about this personally. I mean, there were turkeys everywhere, Goblet. I mean, 7 minutes after daylight the first morning, I killed my first one, and it just went on like that for 4 days.
It really is. I mean, there's something about a Rio that makes you think you're the greatest turkey hunter in the world. And I'm not saying that they're easy or anything like that. I know there are people that probably feel differently about it. But when you grow up chasing these old evil swamp turkeys that we have around here that just, you know, they're just absolutely just grinding on you every single day. And then you go out there and you rub two sticks together and they just come running up to you.
They're
and
you're racing each other. There's five of them racing each other to get shot.
Yeah, this is awesome. So we were able to hunt our group from Lowndes County, some of the same folks, you know. And I guess that's one thing. I've been blessed with having really good friends around here. that will go anywhere and everywhere to kill a turkey. You know, if you got a trip, they're in. And so we put together a trip to Texas, and out there we were hunting with a deer outfitter who just opened his whole places up to us. And we had multiple different properties. One was large as 6,000 acres. I think one was small as 400 acres. And he just gave us the key to the gates and said, look, you can go hunt this place, you can hunt this place. Because, you know, in Texas, of course, it was legal to feed for deer and turkeys and things like that. And he said, all these turkeys are eating up all the feed I put out for the deer. So y'all come on out here and come hunt. And so we just bought our license and drove. We were hunting in Albany, Texas, which is kind of up north, up in the hill country, about an hour and a half west of Fort Worth, and just had a great trip. I'm actually looking at that Rio. One of the Rios I killed while I was out there is mounted in my office. That's just a giant of a Rio. But, you know, we had the benefit of getting able to hunt and move and call on places. You know, one of the things I like about traveling is being able to hunt and basically guide myself. I like to call. I like to work birds myself and trying to figure out the terrain on places. And that was one of the things I enjoyed about that trip is, you know, we're just getting access basically when we go hunt is having the opportunity to go and not have anybody hold your hand. You're hunting them yourself, you know, and so there's a measure of satisfaction in that. I've hunted in Kansas twice. The reason I ended up going back to Kansas is because Randy, who you know, you've hunted with up here before, he and I and another friend from Hainesville went to Kansas a few years ago, and they killed their turkeys and I didn't. And that was my first trip. Actually had to try to kill a Rio. And so it's not always easy. I bet I called up 25 Jakes while I was out there, but I didn't go out there to shoot a Jake. I was planning on trying to shoot a mature, at least a 2-year-old gobbler. And so didn't do that. Then we went to Texas the next year and I was able to kill a Rio. Last year I had an opportunity to go back to Kansas and hunted southeast Kansas. And so in between my first and second trips, Kansas has changed to a draw now for non-residents. And so you have to apply in advance. I think Nebraska is a draw now. And so if you've been hunting out west for any period of time, there's been a lot of changes in regulations for some of the different states and what they require you to do. But this past season, I went to Kansas and had a draw, and you only get one tag. And so I started looking around at different opportunities outside of Kansas because we were in southeast Kansas near Cherryvale and killed a great turkey opening morning. Same situation. Outfitter just gave us some pins and said, here, I know the gobblers have been coming out in this particular field. I scouted them. You go over there. And so literally drove my truck set up and, you know, I think 5 longbeards fly down and ended up having, you know, a Rio on the ground at 6:30 opening morning in Kansas. And so I'd scouted, e-scouted some public land opportunities in Oklahoma and then ended up going down and hunting public land in Oklahoma that afternoon. Went and hunted public land in Oklahoma the next morning, was able to kill a turkey on public land in Oklahoma, which was awesome. So, had that state scratched off my list. And, you know, I'm not intentionally doing a super slam, but I'm not unintentionally doing a super slam either. If you can get a state scratched off your list, you know, you might as well. So I think I'm around 20 something states right now. So you never know. One of these days I might get all 49.
I'm going to talk to the missus about that. Her feelings on it. It's funny you said the public land thing. We did the same thing in Florida. I mean, the guy laughed. After we killed our Osceolas the next day, went to the public land and were on turkeys. He said, "You Alabama boys, you get like, isn't it enough?" He said, "Most guys kill their birds and they're packed up and leaving." But we had a few more days with them, so we went and got on some of public land. We're coming right back. It's my buddy Adrian Johnson. Talk about a slam and a world slam. What is a world slam? We're about to get into the international portion of this morning's discussion right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Mike Ward on assignment this week. It's all right, though, because I got my buddy Adrian Johnson to talk turkeys here as we get ready for what's coming up this coming week. But not just turkeys here at home. We've been talking about a slam, and this is a goal for a lot of turkey hunters out there to get that slam. But that slam we have discussed, Adrian, has all been in these United States, right? It's been right here at home.
Correct.
So it's not been a passport.
About a grand slam so far.
Yeah, a grand slam, and one that does not require a passport.
That is correct.
And then passport turkeys come up. And I remember, how many years ago was it you said, hey, Sean, I'm going to go going to Mexico to hunt Gould's turkeys, right?
That's it. So we ended up going in April of 2024. And it really began several years ago. One of my really, really good turkey hunting friends here in Lowndes County, the same guy I mentioned who we'd gone to Florida with, and I watched him miss four turkeys in less than 24 hours. He and I have been talking about wanting to go to Mexico for years and hunt a Gould's turkey. You know, they're beautiful, beautiful birds. They have beautiful white tips, even more so than a Merriam. Just really pretty country down there. You see these guys on television hunting them. I'd seen, you know, Meat Eaters gone down a couple mm-hmm. of times and done those. You see Steve Rinella hunt them. And it's just one of those things, if you've traveled and turkey hunted, you're like, man, that's awesome. I want to do that one of these days. So one of the things I would encourage everybody to do is either get involved with National Wild Turkey Federation or Turkeys for Tomorrow and start networking. And the reason that we ended up getting an opportunity to go to Mexico is we attended the 2023 NWTF National Convention in Nashville. It was the 50th anniversary, huge deal. It was a huge convention. And so we were up there, and my friend and I were going around talking to different outfitters. And my friend got up there a little earlier than I did, and he calls me and says, I think I found our guy. You come up here and meet him, tell me what you think. And so our outfitter had a booth in Nashville, and so we just struck up a conversation with him. This guy named David Calderon, and he runs Chihuahua Outfitters. And so we talked to David. He had a booth there, but the interesting thing about booking a hunt at the NWTF convention is there were so many people that were there that had hunted with him in the past that all we did is walk around for about 30 minutes, and he gave us a list of people, said, well, go see this guy at Jeb's Chokes booth. Go see this guy over at this booth, and go see this guy at that booth. So we walked around the convention floor and talked to various different people at different booths who had hunted with David, not with David being present with us, just going and talking to them, and every one of us told the same thing. He's going to do what he says he's going to do. He's going to pick you up at the airport. The food's going to be great. The hunting's going to be great. You're going to feel safe the whole time. In fact, one of the guys from Jeb's Chokes is from Kentucky and hunted with David a year or two before we went down, and he said, I've hunted a lot of places in South Texas. I felt way less safe than hunting with these guys in Mexico. We decided to go ahead and book the hunt, and we paid our deposit to him, wired the money to him. He has a bank here in the United States, so you don't have to make an international wire transfer. But he is, you know, a Mexican national. He lives in Chihuahua City, and he is a cattle rancher. He runs cattle on his operation. He has a wildlife background from college, has managed ranches, manages his own ranch now, and then started hunting, outfitting about 20 years ago. And so we ended up going down in 2024. We took a group of seven of us from Lowndes County down to Mexico. We flew from Montgomery to Dallas and then Dallas to Chihuahua City. When we got off the airplane in Chihuahua City, he was standing there waiting for us at baggage claim. Mm-hmm. Picks us up at the airport, takes us to the ranch, which was about 2.5 hours west of Chihuahua City up in the Sierra Madre Mountains. Beautiful country. We were at about 7,500 feet in elevation. We hunted ranch that was about 14 or 15,000 acres of just absolute beautiful country. Big rocky mountains, you know, huge valleys, just beautiful vistas. You know, the temperatures were really like it is in our turkey season. It's cool in the mornings and warm up in the afternoon, and the turkeys absolutely gobbled their heads off. I mean, it was amazing turkey hunting there.
So, Gould's, if you had to like relate them, they are closest to, out of our four, what are they most like?
I think they're more like Merriam's than anything okay. else. The first morning, we're getting out of the truck, and we're walking down a little dirt road, really just a cow path down through the woods where we're going to go hunt. And the guy put me out by myself, and then he went on with one of the other guys. And so I'm walking along, and I'm looking in the dirt, and these things have feet like pterodactyls. I'm like, these things have huge, these are turkey feet. You know, if you look at it, you see looking at tracks here and easterns, you know, a big gobbler have a big foot. So that was one of the things I learned early on, that Goulds have really big feet. They're the tallest of the subspecies. And their spurs aren't nearly as well developed because of the rocky country they live in. So, you know,
okay. They get knocked off or whatever.
Just knock them off, and they just don't, at least in the area that we were, they just don't have really, really big spurs. You know, if you had one with an inch spur, that's a massive spur. But it's kind of similar to Merriam's in that regard. You know, you don't really see a lot of real big, long spurred Merriam's in a lot of areas where they are. It's more rocky country. But the thing about the Gould's, they would gobble just about all day. But the thing I learned the first morning I hunted, that the hens have a little higher pitch. The gobblers have a little bit different gobble. You know, each subspecies kind of seems to have its own unique variations when it comes to the tone of the gobble, things like that. You know, I know a hard charging Eastern about knock your head off when he gobbles, and an Osceola is kind of the same. And then, you know, a Rio's kind of got this little weak kind of gobble, you know. Sounds more like that than anything else. And Merriam's are kind of the same. And I'd say the Goulds are a cross between that. You know, they're distinct. It doesn't sound like an Eastern, but it's a goblin turkey, and you can tell that. So we immediately figured we need to switch our calls up to glass calls, not running slates with lower tones. So we use glass calls and use double reed mouth calls, not quite as much rasp, a little bit higher pitch. And that worked perfect. You know, we had great, great hunts. A couple of guys killed their birds. Matter of fact, we killed 10 turkeys the first day we were in Mexico. So you take a bunch of guys from Alabama that can turkey hunt, and it's like a hot knife through butter sometimes when you go different places. But we could kill two apiece, so we had 14 turkeys to kill. And I ended up killing my turkeys, you know, I think in a day or two. And then a couple of guys tagged out the first day. Then a couple of guys, you know, one guy waited until the last day to finally kill his second bird. But just beautiful, beautiful birds and beautiful country. It was, you know, interesting to get to see how they run their cattle operation down there. They worked all the cattle off horses. They didn't have a single tractor on that whole place. They had one old bulldozer, and they had to truck water to the cattle because most of the cattle ponds, the stock ponds, are dry. We were down there kind of in their dry season in the spring. They don't start getting rain in that part of Mexico until August, which was interesting to me, which is kind of our dry time up here. But just an absolute beautiful bird in beautiful country, real beautiful white tips on their feathers, just absolutely amazing. The food was excellent. We had a lady that stayed. We stayed at a ranch, and we had two ranch houses, two little haciendas that we stayed in. We had a lady that cooked for us that works for the outfitter. And then he had guides there, and some of the guides spoke really good English, some of them not so much. But the lady that cooked for us, cooked outstanding meals. Everything was great. So just an outstanding experience in Chihuahua.
You know what you were saying there, too, about getting this guide booked because y'all were at NWTF, but you had recommendations. And this is the thing that you and I have talked about personally, and we're about to get to the latest hunt you went on. There's things like that I want to do. Even in the States, if I would go with a guide, I'd be a little bit I want somebody to tell me that they're going to, like you just said, they're going to do what they said they're going to do and they're safe, right? If I step out the country, that is even five times more, right? If I'm leaving my country, is this person doing it? So to have you have somebody tell you, the number of people tell you this guy does what he says he's going to do, that's huge. So that's, you know, that's a thing to, you know, and you're talking about that guide's name, somebody wants to do that. You have somebody from here at home that's gone and tells you this guy's on the up and up.
That's it. And there are a number of good outfitters, you know, for ghouls and for oscillators. You just got to do your homework. You know, if you're traveling internationally to hunt, it's no different than guys that go to Africa to do safaris. You know, you got to do your homework. But it's no different if you're going to a different state.
But homework is one thing. But having a homeboy tell you that the person, you know, I could read stuff and reviews online, and that's fine. But having somebody you know go, this guy's fine. This guy's safe. He does what he's going to do. Yeah, they got a bunch of turkeys. So that leads us to this latest trip here. And the turkey that I've often said it looks like a Eastern and a parrot got together and had a child here. The oscillated man.
That's it. They look more like a peacock than a turkey.
They're the most beautiful dang turkeys I have ever seen. Pictures of yours. I mean, I've looked at them in pictures for years, but just seeing the pictures you posted, they're unreal looking.
They're absolutely gorgeous birds. You know, you'll talk to a lot of hardcore turkey hunters, and a lot of them will say, oh, I don't care anything about going hunting oscillated. They don't gobble. They don't do this. They're not like our turkeys. And I would agree with that assessment. They're not. It's not like hunting turkeys like we hunt turkeys. They make a completely different sound. But you get to a point, and that's the way all of us were that went down to Mexico, and you're like, well, we've all killed everything else. We might as well go hunting oscillated too. And it was literally as simple as that, you know, we'd gotten a royal slam by that point, which is all of the four subspecies in the United States plus a Gould. And so we all wanted to finish our royal slams. And so when we were in Mexico hunting with Chihuahua outfitters, our outfitter told us, he said, well, if you ever want to do an oscillated trip, I have a friend that I partner with that's a different outfitter that does the hunt in the Yucatan, in the jungle. And so we're actually in the state of Campeche. And so when we got back up with him last year and said, look, we really want to go. We want to book this hunt. You know, you're telling us this is your guy, and we feel comfortable hunting with you. And if you're comfortable with him, then we're good with it. And so this is just the kind of stand-up guy he is. He said, look, I'll check with him. If we can get enough people to go and we can go the first week that they hunt, I'll go with y'all. So, make sure everything is good. And so that was why we booked this trip. We ended up going with Baja Hunting, which is an outfitter in Baja, Mexico. They hunt a lot in around Baja, California, in that area of Mexico. But they started doing outfitting in the state of Campeche for oscillateds about 18 years ago. And so they had gotten a relationship. Arturo Malo and David Calderon, our outfitter, were good friends. And David said, no, I've hunted with them in the jungle. You know, it's a great trip. He said, but it's hunting. You know, you're going to be staying in a jungle camp. It's not a five-star resort. But because David was going with us and we felt comfortable with him, you know, we hunted with him, that we didn't have any reservations about traveling with him. And then again, it comes back to what I was saying about going to the NWTF convention. I was at the NWTF convention in Nashville this year. I'm on the state board for Alabama. Now I'm really engaged in the NWTF, and so I always try to go every year to convention. But this year, I had an opportunity to talk to David at his booth, and he actually had pictures from our trip when we were there 2 years ago on some of his advertising materials. But I also got to meet Arturo Malo Jr., who was the outfitter's son, who helped run the camp and everything this time, in Nashville. So before I'd ever even, you know, set foot in Mexico hunting with this outfitter, I had an opportunity to meet him, to talk with him, felt very comfortable with him. I knew our friend David was going with us, who's fluent in English. Arturo Malo Jr. was fluent in English. And that was really helpful, because when we got to Mexico this time, not many people spoke English other than the outfitters, a little bit from the guides, and it was a completely different experience, but still an awesome experience nonetheless.
All right. Coming back, I want to talk more about, because you've answered some of the questions about how somebody, you know, could figure out, okay, I'm taking a trip this far away. How do I have some confidence in it? When we do, we're going to talk about what the hunting's like. You said it was different. We'll do that when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all along. And great to talk to my friend. I haven't talked to him a lot, but talked to him on the radio, Adrian Johnson, who is now walked through a slam into a world slam. And you said when you took that first trip, Adrian, to go Chess Miriam's, you didn't think you're just going to hunt turkeys, right? You weren't planning on a world slam.
No, I mean, it just kind of develops organically. You know, you get an opportunity to go hunt a different subspecies, and then you go hunt a different one. You know, I started out hunting Merriam's, and then I had an opportunity to go hunt a Rio, and then an Osceola, and then, you know, you get all those under your belt. Of course, you're hunting Easterns, and I've hunted Easterns in a bunch of different states. You know, then you're like, well, let's look into going to Mexico and get that opportunity. And so we did that. And so by the time you get to that point, you're so far down the rabbit hole, you're like, I might as well just go on and go get an oscillated too.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the point where we were. We booked our trip through the outfitter, had an opportunity to meet with him personally in Nashville. There are lots of good outfitters, and so I'd encourage anybody that's interested in doing an international turkey hunt in Mexico, go to the NWTF convention and talk to these outfitters in person. And they can give you a list of references. You're likely, you know, if you're in this kind of turkey hunting fraternity, you know, you're going to know somebody that knows somebody. And so you'll have an opportunity to try to reach out and talk to somebody who's probably hunted one of these outfitters before. I have several friends who completed World Slams, who've hunted with different outfitters. So, you know, had a good idea about the different outfitters down there. And so we decided we were going to go through Baja Hunting and their outfit. And they're a little different than some of the others in that they don't have a big five-star lodge. They utilize a jungle camp. But I likened it to being doing a backcountry elk hunt trip in the Rockies. You know, I want to get the full experience and get to stay in a wall tent and see and hear the elk bugling, the same with this experience. I wanted to stay in a nice jungle camp, get the full experience, hear the birds, hear the animals at night, all of those different sounds, and it was very comfortable. And so we flew down on March the 5th. You know, there was a little bit of trepidation given all the things that had happened in Mexico the week before, you know, with El Mencho's killing and all the different things that were going on. But one thing I constantly did was check the State Department's travel warnings, and they never changed the travel warning for the states of Campeche or Yucatan. And they were level one the entire time. You know, Guadalajara, certain parts of Mexico, they were problematic, and you had a level three and level four and telling people don't go there. So don't be alarmed simply because the news is saying, well, this is happening in Mexico. It's like I told my daughter, it's like there being a bunch of problems in California, but we're going to Florida.
Right.
It was the same for us in Mexico. Yeah, there were a lot of things happening in certain parts of Mexico, but other parts of Mexico were unaffected. And so don't allow, you know, the things that we see in the media to cloud your judgment on what you want to do. Certainly be safe and do your homework, but don't allow that to dissuade you from taking that trip. And so we get down, we flew from Montgomery. Well, we were supposed to fly from Montgomery. They canceled our flight. We had to go to Atlanta and get a flight from Atlanta to Dallas, and then Dallas to Mérida. And Mérida is the capital of the state of Yucatan, and it's almost due south from us. If you look at a map, the way the Yucatan Peninsula comes up, we were literally just due south. Didn't even have to change time zones. They're in the central time zone just like us. The only thing we did find is they don't change their time, so they're still civilized in Mexico. Don't do this crazy time changes. So so we fly down there and then drove about the next day. We stayed in Mérida that night. Mérida is a beautiful city. It actually reminded me of downtown Mobile or downtown New Orleans with that old kind of Spanish, French, colonial-type architecture. Mm-hmm. A beautiful city. It's about 1 million people. Ate dinner at a really nice restaurant, had some wonderful food. So the next day we drive to the jungle, and hunting oscillateds is not like hunting anything else. You know, the gobblers and the hens look almost exactly alike. And so that was one of the difficulties for us is our guides. Some of the guides spoke a little English, some didn't. My guide I was paired with the first day didn't speak much English. We got there in time to hunt the first afternoon, and I had an opportunity to see about 15 hens and gobblers, and it was difficult to pick them out because they look alike. They don't have beards. They just have really, really big spurs, longest spur turkeys in the world. So it's not uncommon. We killed a couple with spurs in excess of 2 inches. So that's really what you're looking at is the size difference between the hen and the gobbler. The hen is pava, and gobbler is pavo. And so when a guy told you a macho pavo, you need to get your binoculars out and be looking because it's usually a pretty good one.
Yeah, where do you? And I've just got about 2.5 minutes left, but where do you set up? I mean, are you in the jungle or in a field or?
Both. And so where we hunted was 122,000 acre lease that they had, and it was vast Milo fields. Interestingly, they have Mennonites that farm all this land. It was owned by the local people, but Mennonites farmed these huge Milo fields, and so we would set up in pop-up blinds adjacent to the Milo fields, and they were hunting them over bait. Now, we're early in the season, and they're still in huge winter flocks. They said in about another 2 or 3 weeks, the gobblers will start to separate, and then you're going in and hunting them in the jungle with electronic callers. There's really not a call to replicate the sound that they make. It's a very distinct, unique sound. It's not like a gobble. It's more like a drumming sound and then a weird kind of little lilt that they make at the end. But one of my friends that went with us actually got to hunt one that way. He missed one earlier and then got to go into the jungle the last morning we were there and finally killed his turkey, and they were able to call one up. I killed my turkey the first morning that we were there after seeing the turkeys that first afternoon. And it's just an amazing experience. You know, they're brilliant blue heads and they have these odd little yellow bumps on their heads. Just brilliant iridescent feathers, have greens and blues, a brilliant blue on the tail fan. You know, just absolutely amazing birds. They're only about half the size of an Eastern. A big oscillator will weigh 12 pounds, but they may have 2-inch spurs. So just an absolutely amazing experience. You know, if anybody's thinking about doing it, I would encourage you to start doing your research on different outfitters. There's lots of outfitters down there that do these hunts. There's lots of them with a lot of experience and a lot of people that have hunted from the United States or a lot of people from Alabama that have hunted with them. Well, so I'd encourage you just to reach out.
Well, maybe I'll go the next season. I'll go and then I'll come back and tell everybody. Adrian, we're going to have to get you back on later on in turkey season. And you and I got some hunts to make here going forward. So we'll catch up soon.
Sounds good, Sean. Thank you for having me on.
All right, there he goes, Adrian Johnson. World Slam, y'all. We'll do the show again next week. Y'all have a great one.